alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 15th of last year, 2024. I have a sponsor. I sponsor other men. I'm somebody that like craves chaos and drama in my life, and so it's nice that as I get deeper into sobriety, the young men that I choose to work with as sponsees just keep generating that sort of stuff and keep me entertained. So I encourage you all to embark on that journey. I don't think that you can't really say that you've worked the steps unless you've worked through them with somebody else. And I wanted to start off by reading something from the 12:12. Unreasonable fear that our instincts will not be satisfied drives us to covet the possessions of others, to lust for sex and power, to become angry when our instinctive demands are threatened, to be envious when the ambitions of others seem to be realized while ours are not. We eat, drink, and grab for more of everything than we need, fearing we shall never have enough, and with genuine alarm at the prospect of work, we stay lazy. We loaf and procrastinate, or at best work grudgingly and under half steam. These fears are the termites that ceaselessly devour the foundations of whatever sort of life we try to build. And that perfectly describes me without this program. I'm envious of everybody. I'm afraid of everything. I can't seem to put together the sort of life that I want. And everything that I try to do in order to make that happen seems to backfire on me. I can't appreciate anything that I have. I don't have any gratitude. And I'm constantly focused on how I feel, and I never feel good enough. And that's me without AA, and that's why I love AA, because my life today looks nothing like that. So I grew up in Iowa, which is not a very exciting place, and like a big pastime there is just getting in a basement, getting hammered, you know, experimenting with various psychedelics and stuff. And I was a pretty uncomfortable kid prior to discovering alcohol. I had a lot of like weird habits. I had to tie my shoes over and over again, or I had to like tap my fingers in certain patterns, or else I thought that really horrible shit was going to happen to my family. And a lot of this like stemmed from fear. And my dad reminded me recently that I came home on the day of 9/11, which is today, and I was like sobbing, crying, and I was like, "They're gonna attack Iowa next." And he was like, "Why would they attack Iowa?" And I was like, "We're the nation's breadbasket." And I just had these like fears, and I was really aware of how incapable I was of doing anything about them, and so I had to do these little things, these little rituals, in order to like assure myself that this stuff wasn't gonna happen. And my relationship with them would be, you know, kind of familiar to me later when I discovered alcohol, which was like, I would tell myself, all right, I'm just going to tie my shoes once and that'll be it. And it never quite did the trick. I had to keep going. I had to keep doing this stuff because it never fully satisfied me. I never got to a point where the fear completely went away. And the thing that worked for me better than any of that stuff was alcohol when I discovered alcohol. And I've been going around saying that like my first time drinking was a bunch of Bud Light and I smoked some smokable alcohol, but I recalled recently that prior to that, I had been on this trip with my dad, and I met up with a girl that I knew from the Junior Scholars Academy, which is like a camp for nerds that I went to. And my dad, like, you know, we were staying in a hotel, and my dad let me go out with this girl and her friend, and I drank a bunch of Bacardi 151 with Gatorade Rain as the chaser. If you remember that, it's like Gatorade, but it's more watered down. And I blacked out, and I woke up back in the hotel room, and I'm like spinning, and I'm sitting on the edge of this hotel bed, like, which I shared with my dad, by the way. He's very cheap, so we didn't get two beds. And I'm like dry heaving over this wastebasket, and my dad wakes up. He's like, "You okay, bud?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm fine," you know? And he had no idea what was going on. My dad comes from a family of 13 Irish siblings. None of them are alcoholics. If you know Irish people, that is a statistical anomaly. Like, we like to drink, but this family, for whatever reason, like, nobody drank like that. And so neither of my parents really caught on to it when I started drinking. And I started drinking, like, pretty heavily. Not after that incident, but after the Bud Light and Schwag incident. I had this like group of friends, And I felt like I belonged for pretty much the first time in my life. I wasn't good at sports. I was, like I said, kind of like a nerd, but I didn't like the nerdy kids. And so I finally found this group, and we were like the stinky kids. We were the burnouts, you know. We smoked cigarettes and like didn't shower, and we got fucked up. And that was my identity, and I really like bought into that, and I thought that was awesome. And so I'm 15, and these guys, for all their faults, my friends like at least had the good sense that when, you know, the weekend was over, they would generally stop drinking. And I was just like, why do y'all do that? Like, this stuff makes me feel awesome. It gives me this confidence that I've like never really had before. And so I'm like, all right, I'll just, you know, get a little buzz on before school and during school and after school. And that's what I did. Like, I had a really consistent drinking habit starting when I was 15 and would pretty much be like steadily drinking like a water bottle full of vodka around the clock. And I would just eat toothpaste to cover up my breath. They say you're not supposed to eat toothpaste. I ate a lot of it. I'm still here. That's all I'm saying. Like, wasn't the most unhealthy thing I did, but, you know. And so I kind of got through high school without any consequences, and I make it to college, and I'm going to the University of Iowa. I kept good grades because that kept my parents off my back, so I got a full ride scholarship to the University of Iowa, and I was going to be a big writer. That's like the big writing school. And all my favorite writers are like Hemingway and Fitzgerald and these people that drank very heavily, and I'm like, all right, I just get drunk, and then the genius comes out. That's the formula. And it didn't really work out. Like, I was doing all my assignments right before class, and I was going to class drunk, and somehow like nobody was recognizing how awesome and brilliant I was. And I had my first consequence in college, which is that I got arrested for public intox. I just passed out in public. And they sent me an email, and they're like, okay, well, you got to come meet with the dean in a month, but you're on a disciplinary probation, so if you get in any trouble again, you're kicked out of school. And a week before my scheduled meeting with the dean, I get arrested again. Same thing, pass out in public. And I'm like, okay, the code says I'm going to get kicked out of school. And I have to formulate a plot to get away with this. And like a thing with me throughout my life that I've kind of recognized now is it doesn't matter what's actually going on with me, it matters what I can convince you of. Like everything was fake. It didn't matter if I was miserable as long as you thought I was happy. It didn't matter if I was drunk as long as you thought I was sober. Like the image was much more important than whatever was going on underneath. And so the day that I have to go meet with the dean, I wake up and I'm anxious as hell and I'm shaking because at this point now when I wake up and I don't drink, I shake. And I'm like, well, that's not good, so I'm going to have a couple just to calm down before this meeting. And I have a couple and I formulate a plot and I go into the meeting with the dean and I tell him that my parents don't know I'm gay and there's this older man that, I don't know, he just gets me drunk and he leaves me out in public and I just don't, like, I don't know what to do. And they're like, okay, so we're not going to kick you out of school. You have to go do like a domestic violence intervention course. And I was like, sweet, you know. They never told my parents, like, this just became a thing that I got to manage. And I say that, like, there's so many stories like that. There's so many times where I would get my way into like an impossible corner and I would bullshit my way out and I would think I was winning at life because I got to continue living this awful way. And I felt horrible all the time and I was living a lie and I didn't connect the dots that was the reason. I just thought I had to lie harder or like I needed to add different drugs into the mixture. Like it never connected to me that the fact that my whole life was a falsehood was possibly the reason why I also wanted to kill myself all the time, you know? And my first encounter with AA was a result of that, because they also had me go do like a substance abuse thing, and I was sentenced to AA. And I remember coming to these rooms and hating everybody. And at this point, I was like, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, but I wasn't like y'all. Like, some of you guys were really clean cut, and I was like, that's not me, dude. You couldn't understand what's going on in here, bro. And some of y'all were like, looks like you crawled out of a dumpster, and I was like, that guy really has a problem. Like, I'm doing better than him. Like, everybody, nobody actually lined up with me. And I didn't listen to what people said about how they drank. I just looked at their exterior and made a judgment that this program was not for me. And that was, I don't know, like over 10 years ago. And I could be up here with way more sobriety than I have if I had taken that seriously. But I've come to accept that I just was not ready yet. I needed like a lot more pain. And so I get out of college and I come down to New Orleans. And I was telling myself, I'm going to get away from everybody in college and I'm going to like sober up and get my drinking problem under control in New Orleans. And I get there and I quickly discover like a smokable form of snortable alcohol. Crack. I was smoking crack. And I, like within a week of me moving there, and I get a teaching job. That's what I was there to do. I was in this like Teach for America program. And I'm like smoking crack 2 or 3 days a week. Like I would drink until like 5 a.m. and then I'd be like, all right, I have to go teach at 7. Let's smoke a little crack. And like the kids could tell the difference on those days. Like most of the time I'm like I'm a little bit hungover. I'm mostly drunk because I'm drinking in the morning too every day, obviously. But then some days I come in and I'm like, literature is everything. And I'm like really, like really giving it to them, like super excited to talk to them about this. And I made it a year. I taught for a year before they cut me loose. Yeah, they said I smelled like alcohol, and it was the final week of the school year, and I'm like, I've been drinking since day one. I came in on the first day, and I was like, I'm not going to drink while teaching 7th grade, and I'm passing out the papers, and one of the kids was like, ooh, he's shaking, and I was like, fuck this, dude, I'm getting a bottle. So I lose that job, and you can see like different points throughout my life where the image starts to slip, and I'm like, all right, I gotta get my shit together. And so at that point, I like tried to stop drinking, and I had a seizure, and I was like, oh, this is gotta keep drinking, I guess. Honestly, like the relief that I got when I realized that I medically couldn't stop on my own, and I was just like, I have to do this now. Like that felt good to me, to know that there wasn't really, like I wasn't gonna be able to stop. Because I didn't want to. I knew that I needed to, and I wanted to on some level because I wanted my life to improve, but I also like did not know how to exist without drinking. And so for the next couple years, I have these odd jobs, and all of them revolve around driving. And so I'm like a pizza man, and I'm driving drunk, delivering pizza, and then I'm not making enough money doing that, so I decide to take up Uber, and I'm the type of person where I will like go to bed at night being like, I cannot drink again tomorrow. This is dangerous. Like I'm screwing. I'm potentially going to wreck this car and kill people, you know? And I wake up the next morning and I'm like sitting in the car and I'm like, you know, all the problems of my life start to pile up in my head and I start thinking about all this shit and I'm like, I just got to have one. And I have one and I start to feel a little bit better. And then I'm like, it's not just going to have one. I have a couple, and then I'm like, all right, let's get this show on the road. And I start driving. And there would be moments throughout my shift where I'm like, this is no good. Like, I'm driving drunk. I would, when I would have kids in the car, I would be like, this is a really bad idea. And because I'm an alcoholic, it doesn't click. I don't go, yes, I'm going to pull over. Or yes, I'm going to go home. I'm going to drop them off, and I'm going to be done with this. I start going, where is the next liquor store? Like, the consequences in my life that are caused by my drinking, the horrible way that I feel that's caused by my drinking, my only solution to it is to drink more. And there's no way out of that except for a higher power. Like, I tried everything. I tried every method I knew to get sober without doing this stuff. And none of it worked. So, I make my first, like, real, sincere attempt at AA in 2018. And I managed to put together a couple years of abstinence from alcohol. And I say abstinence from alcohol because I kept smoking weed the entire time. And I'm sure there are people here whose plan is like, I'm going to get out of rehab, just going to smoke weed. did not work for me. Anything that I have that I can rely on in that way, that can like reliably change the way that I feel and can make me like, that I can turn to as a higher power, basically. Like, if I have that in my life, it becomes the sole obsession of my life, and it takes over my life. And even if I'm not doing it round the clock like I am with drinking, like, it really gets in the way of me and the desperation that I need in order to really accept this program, in order to really become happy. So I'm smoking weed, and I'm going to AA, and my life is, like, gradually improving because I'm not drinking. But I also have this lie, and again, I feel like shit all the time because I'm lying, and I'm surrounded by people that have this solution and are genuinely happy, and I'm, like, putting on a face for them, and then I'm going home, and I'm getting high. And I'm also, like, I'm an anxious guy, so I would go out, and I would try to substitute weed for alcohol, like, and try to, you know, meet girls, and I would basically be having, like, a panic attack, you know? Like, it didn't work for me. I have this thing when I smoke weed where I feel like I wet my pants, and so I'll go in the bathroom, and I'll be like, no, they're not damp. And then I'll come out and I'll be like, wait, but did I just piss my pants in the bathroom? Like, it's this repetitive thing. And it's no fun. And if I can't, like, drink to drown that out, like, there's no point to it. And I say that because it didn't matter. It didn't matter that, like, 8 out of 10 times when I smoked weed, I had a bad time. I still had to do it. I couldn't just be sober. Like, there was a previous period in my life when I was on probation, and I was smoking fake weed. And that made me feel awful. Like, I would do it, and I would, like, I remember at one point, I was like, I'm going to quit this. I'm going to smoke it, and then I'm going to, like, record a voice note to myself about why it's so bad. And I did it, and then I sober up, and I go back to listen to the voice note, and it's just like, just pure, incomprehensible gobbledygook. And I was like, all right, well, we got to try it again. Like, there's this. It doesn't matter how crappy the substance makes me feel. It's preferable to sobriety, because I don't have a drinking problem. I don't have a drug problem. I have a sober problem. I'm sure you've heard that. Like, that's very true for me. And so I'm going to AA, and I decide to come clean about the weed thing. And I was, like, really halfway kind of doing the deal. Like, I had worked the steps while smoking weed, and I had sponsees while smoking weed, that nobody knows about this. And so I tell my sponsor, I'm like, look, I've been smoking weed, not picking up a white chip, not going to quit the weed, going to continue doing AA, and you better be okay with that. And he was like, no, like, we're not going to kick you out, but you're not sober. And the point that he really made was, he was like, you're sponsoring people, and you're supposed to be an example to them, and so you're either going to lie to them and say, no, I'm not smoking weed, or you're going to say, go ahead and smoke weed, in which case they could go from that to heroin, etc., and overdose. Or you're going to say, do as I say, not as I do, which is not how sponsorship works. And I'm like, all right, if y'all aren't going to accept me, I don't need this shit. And I quit AA. And like I said, my life had improved. I was in, like, the best relationship I'd ever been in. I had a great job. I'd gotten a master's degree. I'm working at the juvenile courthouse in New Orleans. I'm working for, like, the juvenile public defender's office. So I'm going and, like, meeting with juvenile delinquents and preparing, you know, psychological evaluations of them, and then taking that to the court and, like, trying to convince the judge to give these kids another shot. Like, I loved it. And I stopped going to AA, and I'm just relying on weed now to get me through. And I start to hate the job, and the girl starts pissing me off. And there's, like, a nagging voice in my head that says, maybe we should quit the weed and go back to AA. And I'm like, no, we're going to start doing coke. And like I said, smoking weed, not drinking, uncomfortable. Doing coke, not drinking, horrible, man. Like, this is, now I'm trying to talk to girls, and they're like, is your eye about to explode? Like, are you okay? I'm just, like out of my mind. Nothing to bring me down, only going up. And it's horrible. And I'm doing this, like, around the clock, because, I have no way of waking up and not immediately reaching for the thing that makes me feel better. Like, I can't get through the morning, even. And I start adding in other drugs, and at this point, it's, like, a year and a half since I left AA, and I've broken up with the girl. I've, like, went and, you know, slept around. That didn't make me feel happy. The job is pissing me off. I'm doing literally every substance on the planet other than alcohol, my drug of choice. Like, anything that I want. I'm in New Orleans. I have access to all this stuff. I'm on the dark web. I'm getting effed up, y'all. And I'm just, like, I'm not happy. You know, I'm doing whatever my brain is telling me to do to make me happy, and I'm not happy. Like, what's going on? And so is the solution like give up on this path of trying to put stuff in my body to make me feel good and, you know, try AA, which I know for a fact works? Or do we maybe just start drinking again? Needless to say, I start drinking again, and my life gets really bad really quick. And in a matter of 2 years, I alienate pretty much all of my friends in New Orleans, because I'm also not telling people I'm drinking. I have this weird pride about it where I'm like no booze for me, thanks, just drugs. Like I can't let anybody know that I failed at this mission of sobriety. And so now I'm out in public trying to socialize with people, and all I'm thinking about is the bottle back at the house. Like, I'm so lonely, and I have, again, this dark secret. Like, for some part of me just loves creating these horrible, like, dark secret things. And I'm miserable. And so, like, shortly before June 15th of last year, this is interesting. So it always goes this way with me at jobs. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to drink the night before the job. And then I'm like, all right, I'm not going to drink the morning before the job. And then it's like, all right, I'm not going to drink at the job. And then at this last one, I was like, okay, I'm going to drink at the job, but I'm just going to drink the alcohol that I brought with me, and I'm not going to go in this cabinet that they have set aside for little nonprofit events that now has a sticker on it because of me that says, do not drink, we need this alcohol for nonprofit events. So I'm like, they put that up, and I was like, dude, this is bad. I could really get into trouble. And like a week later, I've run through everything that I brought in my backpack, and I'm doing what I do, which is I run out of alcohol, and then I'm like, we'll do more cocaine. And so I'm like geeked up and feeling awful, and I need something to bring me down. And I go over to that cabinet, and I start drinking, and somebody walks by the door, like a good friend of mine walks by the door. I was like, dude, what the hell are you doing? Because it's 2 p.m. And also, it didn't matter what time it was. We're not supposed to be doing that. It was like a whole gossip thing around the office. Like, people are like, someone's been stealing the alcohol out of there. I'm like, yeah, that's crazy. Wow. And I get caught, and I lose that job. And, you know, I talked about the thing of, like, clinging to stuff to show the world I'm doing okay. Like, that job was my thing. That was my proof to everybody else and to myself that I was functional. And losing it, I was like, this is it. I made like a pretty firm resolution that I was going to end my life, and kind of spent a week trying to get the balance between the different drugs I was doing right, where I would have the courage and I would feel like high enough and also low enough that I would do it. And I couldn't work the balance out. I would go get another bag, and then, oh, I'm going to need to go get another bottle. And like, in a way, the drugs and the drinking kept me alive, probably for longer than that, honestly. Like, when I don't have drugs and alcohol in my life, and I don't have this program, I'm so bad off. Like, I'm miserable. And, I go through that week, and I have this good buddy of mine, like my best friend. He's the best man at his wedding. I'm his kid's godfather. And I told everybody I resigned from the job. And he called bullshit. He was like, I don't think so. I think there's something more nefarious going on. Like, why don't you tell me what's really going on? And so I kind of had this moment where I was like, fuck it, whatever. And I said, yeah, I lost my job. I'm going to kill myself. And he had come to Tampa. He was a horrible junkie in high school and college. And he had come to Tampa like 13 years earlier and gotten sober at this treatment center. And he was like, why don't you come back? You can go to this treatment center. He, you know, knows people there, and they'll let you go through. And I said, like, give me a week to try and sober up on my own. And so this was a nice step one experience, is I'm like, okay, tomorrow we're going to go from 32 beers to 31 beers. And I tried that for a week, and it went up. Like, I can't even decrease the amount. I'm like desperately trying to prove to myself that I can get this under control, because I really didn't want to go to rehab. And like, abandoned my life. I had a cat. I had all this stuff that I was like, I can't leave New Orleans, you know? And it didn't work. And so after a week, I flew out here. He told me, he was like, it's actually better if you show up to detox drunk than if you show up mid-withdrawal. And I was like, okay, bet. And don't remember the flight really, but I like came to in detox, and they were knocking on my door. And they're like, come on, we're doing an AA meeting. And I came and I sat on the couch at the Turning Point Detox, and I just started like sobbing. Like, it didn't, these guys that were there, they're talking about the shit. And the thing is, like, I knew it worked. I wanted so badly to just give up and like die. And these guys are here giving me this message of hope, and I was like, fuck, I have to do this. And like, I do this thing where I send back energy to myself in times of difficulty. Like right now, I'm very happy, and so I send it back to that guy where this path looks insurmountable and I can't do it, and I'm like, you're gonna make it, buddy, hold on. We gotta get to right now. And yeah, man, like, I get through detox and I get a sponsor and I start working these steps. And if you'll allow me, I want to talk a little bit about like each of them and how they worked for me. So step one, admit I'm powerless over alcohol and my life is unmanageable. Like, I did that out there over and over again. There were so many times that I tried to just like even slightly control my drinking, and I get going and I'm like, that guy that made that resolution that we weren't going to drink today or that we were only going to have this amount, that guy, we're having fun now. And like, just over and over, pretty much every day, I would try and stop, or I would try and reduce the amount, and I wouldn't be able to do it. I was completely powerless, and my life like had fallen apart, you know? I think the second part was the thing I had trouble with, and that's why I needed to lose that job. I had to be fully convinced my life was unmanageable. But yeah, I'll also tell you, like, if you're here from a treatment center and you went through detox, you shouldn't have that much trouble with step one, because you're literally going to professionals and saying, I can't do this on my own. That's a higher power for you right there. It's not going to be the one that keeps you sober, but like, recognize that you've already made that admission a little bit, or you wouldn't be in a treatment center. And step two, I think I work at meetings like this. Like, I come and I hear people talk, and they talk about the same exact problem that I have, like this just discomfort and this like life not being good enough, and they talk about horrible shit that they did and horrible things that they went through. And then they talk about how they got better, and they talk about what their life is like now, and they tell me it's because of this higher power that's personal to them, but that I can find my own one. And I just have to ask myself at a certain point, like, is everybody bullshitting me? Are people trying to bamboozle me? Like, is there some, you know, ending thing where we all get blood sacrificed, or they take all our money or something? Like, no, people are here doing this because it worked for them, and because part of it is giving it away. Like, no one is lying to you. It's that simple. And so step three is giving control of my life and my will over to that higher power. And for me, early in sobriety, that looks like getting a sponsor and doing exactly what he tells me to do. I wanted so bad to get out of rehab and go back to New Orleans. Like, my life there was messed up, but I had a lot of things that I was involved in that I needed to be a part of, and I had a whole career there and all this stuff. And my roommates were like, dude, we will not do coke in front of you anymore. We'll go in the bathroom. It's going to be fine. And like, I'm convinced that I need to go do that. And my sponsor was like, no, you need to go to sober living in Tampa. And my buddy that had me come here was like, dude, no, you need to go to sober living. I had to talk to 8 people, including multiple medical professionals, to get that through my head that, oh, shit, like, every decision that I've made has led me up to this point, and this point sucks shit. So keep that in mind. If people are telling you to do stuff, whether it's your sponsor or the folks in treatment, like, what makes sense to you is getting high and drunk all day. If something doesn't make sense, probably a good sign that you should do it. And like, that switch flipping for me, which, by the way, I have to flip the switch constantly every day, it doesn't stay flipped, but like, making that realization that I'm dumb and my best thinking gets me loaded and suicidal, like, huge release. It was the same kind of release that I got when I would like give up on sobriety for the day, when I used to be like, all right, we're drinking today. That letting go of everything and being like, I'm not in control, and that's a good thing, feels incredible. And I do it by saying that prayer, and I do it by constantly consulting people whenever I have a big decision in my life and doing what they tell me to do. 4 and 5 is kind of looking at the things that kept us drinking. Like, the big book in the 12 and 12, it breaks it down into security, which is like all the stuff that we think that we need in order to be happy and safe. Society, which is our relationships with other people and our esteem in their eyes, and sex. And so if you look at the 4th step, it's kind of broken down the same way. You have your resentments, which are about your relationships with other people and your place in society. And you have your fears, which are about losing something that you have or not getting something that you want. That's your security. You have your relationships with others. So those things, like those instincts that we have that are God-given, we look at all the ways that they have gone wrong and that they have put us in this position where now we're powerless and we're dependent on the bottle or the needle or whatever it may be. And you put all that on paper, and then you share that with God, and you share that with your sponsor, and you share it with yourself, most importantly. Like, I really needed to realize how much shit I was holding on to and blaming other people for that was entirely my problem. It didn't matter if I played no role in it to begin with. Me continually rehearsing it and going over it in my head is insanity, and it's going to keep me loaded unless I get rid of it. And that fifth step. In 6 and 7, I kind of look at, like, what these steps leading up to this have revealed about me and who I am. Me? I am dishonest. I am selfish. I'm very manipulative. And I say that, like, that's my instincts. That doesn't define who I am. My behavior defines who I am. So step 7 is asking God to remove those parts of me that are keeping me from being useful to him and my fellows. So, for example, when I go to Walmart and I go through the self-checkout, I still want to steal. Like, it's, my mom used to shoplift in front of me. It runs in the family. It's like a thing. And my brain goes, steal that ham. And instead, I go, my creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me. Like, you do the 7-step prayer, and then I don't steal the ham, and I walk out, and I feel like a miracle has occurred. Because I'm not doing the thing that comes naturally to me. Like, something has changed. That didn't come from me. That comes from this higher power, and that comes from me taking my will and putting it over here and doing instead what God wants for me. And when I do that stuff, like, it's painful in the moment, and then I feel so much better in the long run. Like, my entire life has been characterized by me doing what I want to make me feel good right now and then feeling like shit in the long run. And if instead I focus on, like, instead of feeling good, being good, I end up with, like, a sustainable kind of contentment and happiness that's beyond compare. And steps 8 and 9, I'm looking at the material ways that I harmed other people, and I'm going back and I'm trying to repair that. And that process has been, like, remarkably healing for me. Because I'm obsessed with image management, my parents, like, did not know that I had started drinking again. Like, they didn't know about this, but they did know that they would call me, and I would either be depressed because I was drunk, or I would be, like, manic and irritable because I was coked up. And so they would call me, and I'd be like, "Well, life's horrible." And then they'd call back, like, a week later and be like, "You okay, buddy?" And I'd be like, "Why are you bringing that up?" Like, it was just this horrible thing. And so I got to, like, now I'm a stable, supportive presence in their life, and I don't come to them with problems. I come to them once the problem is solved. Like, I have all these guys in my life now because of this program that when I'm struggling with something, I get to talk to them about it. I don't have to worry my poor mother. Like, she's got enough on her plate. And because of that, I'm proud of who I am as a son now. I'm proud of who I am as a friend. I'm proud of who I am as a brother. Like, I get to be somebody that I've always wanted the world to think I was. The image gets to match up with what's in back of it. And it's not as spectacular and fantastic as I wanted to convince everybody, but it's real. And because of that, like, it feels very different. And in step 10, I kind of throughout my day make a note of where I'm afraid, I'm resentful, I'm selfish, I'm dishonest. And I share that with another person. I do, like, a nightly inventory. I've been doing it for 240-something days now. I send it to my sponsor. He doesn't read it. I know, because I talk shit on him in there. Like, this is just a part of my process, is, like, getting this out, not letting it build up again. Because if I did, I'd have to do, like, another 4-step every 2 weeks, because I still have resentment constantly, but it doesn't burn me up the way that it used to. It doesn't force me into a drink. It doesn't force me into ruining my own life. And step 11 is prayer and meditation. It's, like, broadening that contact with that higher power. I'm not going to lie and say I'm, like, a pro meditator, but I will say I drive to work now with no sound on, and I do this thing where I breathe in, and I think the word God, and I breathe out, and I think the word me. And I just try to get more God in and less of me, and that has made my day go a lot better. Because if I'm doing my whole day thinking about what I want to happen, it doesn't turn out right. And if I live my whole day just like, what you got planned next, I'm much more happy. I'm much more satisfied. Like, I can actually find true joy. In the past, whenever something would go right for me, I'd be waiting for the other shoe to drop. I'd be like, what catastrophic thing is going to happen next? What's going to happen to ruin this good thing? And now it's like, something goes my way, I get to say thank you, God. Something doesn't go my way, I get to thank God for the opportunity to grow and strengthen myself through this adversity, and to rely on him more. And then step 12, my absolute favorite, is sharing this message with other people. It's coming and speaking at things. Me and Chase do a detox meeting every Tuesday night at Turning Point, which was the meeting that I was at when I started blubbering and snot all over myself and realized I had to do this shit. And a sponsee of mine who I met at that meeting just went and talked to her the other night, and I like had goosebumps, like seeing the cycle of this program in effect, seeing somebody that came in like on their last bit of luck now have something to give to others is miraculous. It's amazing. It's like nothing that I've ever encountered elsewhere in my life. And yeah, like I love sponsoring people. I really enjoy talking about this program, as you can probably tell. Like it saved my life. I'm a huge geek about it. And I don't know. I don't know what more I can really say, except like I kind of already touched on this, but I did whatever my brain told me would make me happy for a very long time, and I ended up like not wanting to exist anymore. And for the past year and change, I have done pretty much exactly the opposite of what my brain told me to do, and I now am happier than I think I've ever been in my life. And so if you were in this position where you're like, damn, all my decisions kind of fuck my life up, I encourage you to get a sponsor. They'll raise their hands at the end of this meeting and just do whatever they tell you. Like, it is that simple. If they have what you want, don't second guess it. Like, look behind you. Look at the burning wreckage of your past. Recognize that maybe you're not the best person to run this show. And, yeah, thank you all for letting me be a service.